you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Wow, really excited this guy came on the show. You might know him from the Partridge Family. You might know him from Breaking Bonaducci, or you might know him from his morning radio show that he's been doing for 10 years. It is Danny Bonaducci, one of the original kids from the Partridge Family. Just a super interesting dude. Wow. I mean, he has been part of the American zeitgeist, good word, everybody, for, 40 years or some crazy thing like that. And just a really interesting guy. I could talk to that dude for hours. Remember, we do the show live every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can subscribe online at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR. But the most important thing is this. We want more and more people to know the show. We had the best numbers we ever did in May, and I would love to beat that in June and then again in July. Why not? The more people that share the show, the better. But a direct way to support the show would be going to gasdigitalnetwork.com using the code SDR. And if you're a big Partridge Family fan or Danny Bonaducci fan, you could have heard this episode 5 days earlier. Here it is right now, the Danny Bonaducci episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, it is James Mattern. Thank you so much, James, for coming in and filling in again, buddy.
Buddy, this is great. I just got back like 8 hours ago. Let's start some shit.
Good. And of course, Shannon producing the show. And every once in a while, you get a guest where you're like, oh, this guy's going to knock it out of the park for several reasons. But speaking about a guy that fucking lived the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle, I even watched an interview with him earlier today where your actual statement was, there was just a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on during the Partridge Family. I'm like, oh man, this guy's just going to be so fucking easy to talk to. You know him, he's an actor, comedian, radio, TV personality, the Dooch Man on Twitter. It is fucking Danny Bonaducci. How are you, buddy?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. There's always a comfort that I get when I start talking to a radio guy and just I'm like, oh, well, this is going to be fucking easy.
Well, I hope you're right.
It'd be so cool if you just didn't say anything right there. If you just like didn't respond, it would have been great.
All right. As long as we're doing this, what does the screen with all the players look like to you when you look at it?
Right now, who I'm looking at?
Not who, just what's it look like?
I see four videos. What do you see?
Okay, I see kind of a checkered board like you guys are the Brady Bunch. And okay. No faster way to get to my heart than to throw the Brady Bunch in our interview.
I'm
cool.
I'm the youngest one in curls, Danny. I'm the youngest one in curls.
Oh, no, we would need, wait, we only have four, so we would need, it was 12 in that, right?
We need to start drafting.
There was nine in that.
There's bunch of them that are dead. If you don't replace them, we've got enough people.
I guess that's true. All right, so let me just start, before we get you were getting into a fight story off air. Just finish your story here with what James is wearing. He wore a t-shirt for you.
I appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah.
And you try to buy that shirt today? Is that what you just said?
No, it's just in the windows. Bruce Lee is in the windows all over Chinatown because that's where he started, was Seattle. I actually went and visited his grave not too long ago, but he still rocks Seattle.
Oh, yeah, he's the man. And what leads me into, with just jumping into it organically, who the fuck knew that you actually trained with Chuck Norris and have a goddamn black belt? That's fascinating.
Actually, I have a third degree black belt. Thanks for asking. I have two other black belts, but they're more honorary. Once you get, because I'm fairly far up the food chain in martial arts. Third degree black belts don't just fall out of trees. So it was Chuck Norris who didn't give me my first black belt. His school did.
Right.
But we're doing a Tiger Beat shoot, which how weird is that with Chuck Norris? We're in the park by the Mulberry Carpets. And we're doing a thing because he did a movie and they're trying to make him a heartthrob. And we're sitting over there, they're taking pictures and everything. And then I'll just call them a gang. looks at us. They're being kind of dicks. They're starting to walk towards us. And I said, hey, what do we do here? And he said, just relax. Don't you do anything. And he said, when they get up here, I'm going to explain to that guy that I'm going to break his elbow. Then I'm going to explain to that guy that I'm going to break his leg. And then they're going to chicken out. And they chickened out before they got there. They walked up and went, oh, man, he's going to break my elbow. I ain't going.
That's fucking great. I always wonder what it would feel like. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5", 260.
Jesus.
So nobody fucks with me. But if they do, they will be very satisfied at how easily they can beat me up. But it just never comes to that. If I just act tough, it always ends there.
Yeah, well, and I believe that. I believe that to be true. Although, I fought, and this is so lame, I fought Jose Canseco.
I saw that.
6'6", 265 pounds, a full-blown steroid rage. And I did okay. He got a huge shot in, closed my eye, and nobody really ever done that before. And I look up. The guy is an idiot. So he hits me. I fly across the ring. I'm up against the rope on the other side, and I'm like this. And I'm just assuming when I go like this, he's going to be right here killing me. He didn't move out of his corner. The guy just, I don't know how you have no instincts on how to fight when you're fighting, but he did not. Now, of course, I didn't win that fight. It was a draw. And that's my only draw. I got 13 wins. Thank you very much.
Yeah, 13 wins, no losses, right?
No losses. One tie. And it's with Jose. It's with a giant.
Right.
I would bet on you, Danny, based on knowing you, like what, like your temper and that black belt, and the fact that I saw Jose Canseco pitch a couple innings once, and the way he pitched, yeah, the way he threw, I'd go, nope, I'll fight that motherfucker. And I was 11. Okay,
my wife is from Sacramento, and I'm at the fight, and you know, you get geared up and you say terrible things to one another. My wife pulls out a Jose Canseco trading card that she's had since she was a little girl, and she says, do you think after the fight you can get him to sign this? And of course, I said, after the fight, he's going to be unconscious because you say stupid things like that. But hey, by the way, later on, he signed it. It's a pretty good sport. An idiot, but a good sport.
And by the way, I'll segue this nicely. You ready for me doing my research? Speaking of trading cards, you said once in an interview, if your house was burning down, the only thing you would grab first is the trading card mount that you have of your childhood training card and your adult fighting trading card. That's mounted that your wife did.
You did. That's some amazing one because it's probably my favorite thing. It's down in the garage right now. If I'd have known, I'd have gone and got it. But yeah, it's a trading card of Danny Partridge looking like Danny Partridge. And it's a trading card of me as a wrestler looking like a stupid kind of serial killer. And you know what? That was a lot of fun. Hulk Hogan couldn't be more cool. We're doing some commercials for our talk shows or game shows, whatever the hell they were, in Florida. And Hulk Hogan's like one of the sweetest guys, but he needs two guys to rock back and forth to get him out of his chair because his bones are just so bad. Yeah. And he goes, are you sober, Bonaducci? And I said, at that time, I said, yeah, I was. He goes, how about pills? You take pills? And I said, well, yeah. What do you got? And I thought we were kidding. He had a boatload of Vicodin. It was such a good weekend.
Oh, my God. That's great.
Wasted with Hulk Hogan? Come on.
God damn it. That's awesome. So I want to start with the beginning because it's so fascinating to find out your first movie. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. First, your dad, who I know you didn't have a great relationship towards the end, but he was in the business already, right? He was a writer. Comedy, did some big TV shows and stuff. And I assume
Dick Van Dyke Show with his first. Not bad. Amazing.
Not bad. And I assume that's where you got the bug to be in acting through that. Because you were 5 when you got your first movie, which was fucking with Elvis, which we'll talk about.
It's so weird.
I'm guessing
my dad did not give me the ache to be in show business, to be an actor. I remember my dad was a nasty man. And I remember I was on the way to work. I'm 11 and I'm on my way to work. And I go out the door and there's fans in the front yard, which has started. And now that's happening every day. So I start to go out the door and he grabs my 11-year-old shoulder and he says, remember this, son, pimping is one step above acting.
Wow.
Jesus Christ, Dad. As soon as I figure out what that means, I'm going to have my feelings hurt.
But how did you get
to be at Catholic school too? Ironically, I mean, who would
ironically?
But I mean, at 5 years old, how did this even happen? Who was it? Your mother that pushed you? You didn't have to say. I'm sure at 5, I want to be an actor. Someone had to kind of guide you at 5.
Yeah, no, they did for sure. And my mom, and you know, I thank my mom recently more than once. You know, it's a hassle to try and be a working, even a kid actor. You got to go to Hollywood. You got to find a place to park. You got to go sign in with 50 kids that are all dressed exactly alike. And then you get to go home. So I think she took care of it. By the time I can remember clearly, I was all about it. You know, things, I worked with Elvis. Why wouldn't I be about that?
But so at 5 years old, your first movie is with Elvis. I believe the movie was called The Trouble with Girls. But did you know at five, holy shit, this is Elvis? Or were you too young to even realize that's Elvis?
Oh, no, I've never seen anything like Elvis Presley. I've done a lot of stuff, weird stuff, crazy stuff, Hollywood stuff, homeless stuff. But you say this, oh, and then I did a movie with Elvis Presley. It's like everything you said doesn't matter at all. And then you thought I was five and then dig this. He gave me a car.
I know this story, but I'm not going to interrupt.
Oh, you bastard. You and your research. Well, just to make sure people out there don't think I'm out of my mind. It was a pedal car, and there were half a dozen of them because there was a bunch of kids in this movie, and he gave everyone a car. Thanks
That's
for
really
recording
cool.
that.
So you have vivid memories of engaging with the king at 5 years old.
I do. I have a vivid memories. Yeah, I do. One is, I was looking in his dressing room as he came out. No real reason, just you couldn't help but see it. And he had women's legs, like plastic mannequins, coming straight out of his wall, and another one just kind of an arm. And I looked at him and he goes, "How do you like my trophies?" And I went, "They're great. If I was older, I'd know you were sick."
Danny, knowing his history, did he ask you to do Vicodin too?
He did not. Vicodin had not been invented yet, but I'd get around to it.
Because yeah, you're talking like prime Elvis at that point, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah. We're talking not the same year, but how he looked and behaved. Remember his comeback thing when the black leather suit and just the guitar? God, that was an amazingly good time.
That's so fucking crazy. Okay, then obviously, just to go down memory lane a little bit, the thing that you've been talking about for 51 years, because last year was the 50th anniversary, is the Partridge Family, which is just ingrained in everyone's soul at this point. If you're, I guess you have to be over 30 to really know what it is, I would imagine. Shannon,
no, I just got a painting from a girl in the mail, a 13-year-old girl. Wow. And she asked me if I would sign it. It was a painting. She did, and it was really nice. So I signed it, and she was so excited. She's 13 and knows exactly who I am, exactly what I've done. So whatever it is that kids watch, it holds on. People, I did a show called World's Dumbest, and kids went crazy for that show.
Is it playing anywhere right now? The Partridge
Which
Family
one?
Reruns?
Don't know. Don't keep track. Don't get residuals. Who
yeah, because you got fucked because it stopped at 96 episodes. If it went to 100, you would have made money, right?
That's exactly right. And I didn't make – you ready for this? The kids on Modern Family are all making $300,000 an episode. They weren't nearly the star that Danny Partridge was, and we sold a bunch of music, and I made $400 a week.
That is fucking, and I saw that David made $600. Like, you guys are making nothing.
Nothing. I mean, money by those standards, but not real dough. I just told the story the other day to somebody. They couldn't pay him anymore. They couldn't find the money to pay David Cassidy, but somehow they got trade, and he drove in one day in this brand new white Corvette, and that apparently was a bonus.
And hopefully it wasn't a pedal car, though. Was it a pedal car?
No, it was not. It was a real life Corvette.
Thank God. Thank God. So now, the thing I like, he passed away, I think it was 3-4 years ago now, David, right?
Yeah.
But the story that I found so nice, because you looked at him, you're a kid, you don't have a great family life, you're sleeping with a lot of them on set, you're going home to their houses, you know, you're staying there because you don't want to go home. But
and later
on,
by the way, just real quick, they didn't want me to go home. Not often, but often my dad would misjudge and I'd go to work on the part with a huge black eye and they'd have to wait and do makeup. So it wasn't just because they were wonderful people. But they didn't need that, and they were every single one of them took me to their house to sleep for the weekend, except Dave Madden, who brought me in for months at a time. Just the sweetest man in the whole wide world.
It's amazing if they had to rewrite storylines like Danny gets hit in the eye with a baseball so that they can film.
Yeah. Oh, they could have. You're right.
Yeah. If they were thinking outside the box, they could have really made a whole separate story that way.
Yeah. Partridge Family did a lot of thinking out of the box. Just wild people. Hey, I'll tell you something, though. Did you know Richard Pryor was on the Partridge Family?
Richard Pryor and Lou Gossett Jr. That's what I found out that shocked the hell out of me.
Lou Gossett Jr. with hair. That's a pretty impressive moment. And by the way, Richard Pryor could not have been sweeter, but our hairstylist, Mel Burns, I believe his name was, He had the steel comb. It was a regular, looked like a regular comb, but it was steel. And Richard Pryor starts screaming, "Who's got the N-word comb?" at the top of his lungs. And he's saying over and over and over. And we're the Partridge Family, for God's sakes. What do these words mean? Is that man going to hurt us? And then he just stopped. He goes, "Just kidding," and walks up.
Well, I never saw the episode, but how did they work him in? Was he a comic on the show? Was he that big already? Like, what was his
role? He was that big already. He was Richard Pryor already. I believe the episode was something about we stumbled across a firehouse that was losing their neighborhood money, whatever it was, and we did a benefit concert for them. And here's my favorite line. I can't believe I remember this. Lou Gossett Jr. and Richard Pryor stand there and they're talking about how they need to raise money. And David Cassidy goes, "Well, we can play a song or two. I've been working this. It's kind of a cool Afro thing." Did you say an Afro thing to Richard Pryor? Are you insane?
Christ, that's great. That's so crazy.
By the way, the song was called Bundalela and went like this. Bundalela, my love. There you go.
Oh, I like it. See?
When was the last time I remember the part that Jeremy sang to you, huh?
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So, from what I read, and again, obviously, I've been doing a lot of research. I've like been all down at Danny Bonaducci all the time for the last few days. You end up, so now, the obviously, probably, I mean, they said David Cassidy is like heralded as the first teen idol of modern television, right?
News to Ricky, what's that guy's name?
Ricky Nelson.
Oh, right. I think there was some sort of caveat of why they said that. If I got why it was like, for whatever reason, maybe he was younger at the time. I don't know, whatever. And you were like, I mean, Partridge Family was just fucking everywhere. But like you said, didn't make a lot of money. Things didn't go so great post Partridge Family initially. And at 16, you're homeless.
Yep. And I lived or stayed. You don't really live anywhere. But I used to stay and park the car that I was living in right behind Grauman's Chinese. And in the morning, when I would wake up, I'd go through this little arch and all the tourists would be where the footprints are. And they'd go crazy. That's Danny Pudgett. I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to eat next. And I'm signing autographs left and right. It was just so weird.
I have to imagine that. I always would imagine that's the worst feeling in the world when you're so recognizable and don't have any money. They, like, if you're on a train or they see you in a car, it's just got to be heartbreaking. I can't even imagine that. But you never had fuck you money at that age anyway. So it's not like it's not like it was something you made millions and lost it. They just fucked you the whole time.
The whole time, although I don't know if they were fucking me by their standards by that time.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what I mean. Like, it was never like you didn't blow millions of dollars. It was just that it is what it was.
Even for money, I didn't blow. What are you insane?
The thing that cracked me up, I don't know how old you were, but I watched this song, you singing. You look like you were 12. I don't know, but you put out an album. And there was a song that was extremely sexual for a 12-year-old.
It was crazy.
And you got banned from radio. Can you just elaborate how you would even get down that path?
You know the expression, "I was banned in Boston"? Apparently, that's a real thing, because I was banned in Boston. The song was called "I'll Be Your Magician," which sounds just fine until you listen to the words. "I'll be your magician, da 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 da. Touch you softly with my magic wand. Touch you softly with my magic wand." And it gets worse. It gets also, you drug this poor girl, and once you're under my spell, I'll make love to you. And by the way, I'm 12 and drugging these chicks.
Wow.
But nobody thought this is an issue while you were recording it?
No. No, nobody. I mean, we were all, well, not we, the grown-ups, were all shocked that, because it caused an uproar. It wasn't just they wouldn't play it. It was, you know, just shy of abuse. If we put that out today, you know that song,
Wet-Ass Pussy?
It's Cold Outside. That one from,
oh, yeah, Baby's Cold Outside. Yeah,
you know, Baby's Cold Outside. She says, "What's in my drink?" And he's drugging her and having sex with her. Those are the exact words to my little 12-year-old song, but they just wouldn't play it.
That's fucking crazy. It really is hard to believe that that would even fly. Like, how that even came out is fucking crazy. When you were filming Partridge Family, no one knew how to play anything except David, right?
David knew how to play. And David fashioned himself to be Hendrix. He was not. But he was a very competent musician. He was very competent. He would put all his songs in the correct order that he wanted them. So he was large and in charge all the way. Just what he was in charge of got a lot smaller. What he was in charge of went from 100,000 seat at Wembley Stadium to $48, 48 people in an audience. And, you know, I'd love to say, because I love David Cass, I just think he's the greatest, but he did not take it that well. He did not take playing for 40 people. And, you know, 8 of them were staff. So, yeah, he did not love that.
That's got to be crazy. But so you put an album out at 12. Did you, someone gave you singing lessons? Or because you weren't singing at the time, right? Like, how did that come about? It was just expected, since we're all, people think we're all playing instruments and we're all singers. It was just a logical step to put out an album?
I hadn't given it that kind of consideration, but that seems, because remember, Christy McNichol put out an album. The Brady Bunch guys put out an album. Everybody put out an album. So I guess somebody just said, and the guy that wrote most of those songs and sang really the big harmonies, his name was Bruce Roberts, and he's a phenomenal talent. Wrote a lot of songs for Barbra Streisand. But we just went to a studio, and the good old days, did the whole album in about 5 hours and went home.
That's crazy. Was there ever a rivalry between the Partridge Family and the Brady Bunch? Like, where you like talk shit about each other or anything like that?
You should Google Danny Bonaducci and Barry Williams fighting.
I saw the fight, but that's years later. I'm talking about like when you're both megastar shows.
Right.
Was there a rivalry, or was it because you're both doing well, it doesn't matter?
No, they weren't doing that well. They were the Brady Bunch. We were the Partridge Family. They had Barry Williams. We had David friggin' Cassidy. We were the big dogs.
Okay, fair enough. I don't remember well enough to know the differentiation of I think Brady Bunch did much better in reruns than they did when they were initially on the air.
Much better. Greg did really well.
All right, before we go any further, so happy these guys are back on the show. They are Blue Chew. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And they give harder, stronger erections and combat all forms of erectile dysfunction. Blue Chew is available as an online prescription service. No need to visit the doctors. No awkward, weird conversations. No waiting in line in the pharmacy. Ships directly to your door in a discreet package. You know we've been talking about them forever. Go to BlueChew.com, use the code SDR, and you receive your first month free. And we want to thank Blue Chew for always sponsoring this podcast. You know how we say it. You chew it and you do it. Blue Chew is free when you use the promo code SDR at checkout. You just pay the $5 shipping and handling. We couldn't be more happy that they've been such a longtime subscriber. It means you and I and a lot of our listeners want harder, stronger erections. Who wouldn't? Again, go to BlueChew.com, use the code SDR. All right, let's get back into it. Yeah, and then the story that I loved about David and you, then we'll move on, is that, so you're homeless, you're not doing well. He says to you, "You were always the funny one, and now you're a joke. Come with me. I'm going to give you a job opening for me." And that kind of turned your life around. Is that roughly right?
Yeah, but it didn't exactly go that way. And it's not like David Cassidy didn't get a little help. I was going to jail for like 5 years over a nasty little incident. And it was all over the papers. You couldn't miss it. Because I got in a big fight with the transvestite.
Yeah, and I know the story. In Phoenix, right?
And like you say, the kid from the Munsters beats up a Nazi. There's no way that that's not going to be news. And David Cassidy then...
Great headline, by the way. I'd love to see that headline.
Great.
Thank you. Then David comes up and says exactly what you said. It's all accurate. But it's not like he didn't need me. I was on the cover of every National Enquirer, and we're going to go sell some tickets in your neighborhood. So David says to me, listen, Danny, we're going to take a bus tour. We're going to go around the country, and we're going to get you a job at the end of this tour, which, by the way, happened. God bless that man. But he says to me, listen, we're going to get on a bus, but there's no smoking, no women, no alcohol, and no drugs. And I said, I am not going. Why would you? I'm going on my first tour with David Cassidy. It's like one of my dreams come true, and there's no women or drugs. I'm sorry, Cassidy. I don't love you that much. But we came to kind of an understanding, and we went on tour, and it was really good. And by the end of it, I had a job at Eagle 106 in Philadelphia.
Does that understanding mean some drugs and some women, or on alternating Tuesdays you could do drugs? Like, what was the understanding?
Like casual Friday at a bank.
That's exactly right. No, I think we didn't really get any. He just turned a blind eye to it. But this was so mean of him. But he was talking to me, not the girl. So I met this girl, and she had a terrible reputation. We were in Cleveland or some such thing. And I'm preparing to take her home, and home is a bus. And I'm standing there, and David Cassidy comes around, and he looks at the girl, and then he turns to me, and he says, "You disgust me." What? Wow. David, I disgusted David Cassidy? What happened here, man?
Jesus Christ. Did you not take the girl home because of that?
Actually, no, I most certainly did.
Oh,
was he gonna fire me? I'm the news.
All right.
I mean, he's David Cassidy, and that's great. But people are going, the guy from the National Enquirer who punched the transvestite, this must be great.
So great. I brought a girl backstage once to introduce a band I was friends with, this band called Steel Panther. They're big in L.A., right?
And I'm friendly
with the guys. And I was always with this very young Russian girl who barely spoke English, which is my M.O. That's my favorite thing in the world. And I bring her backstage, and the singer looks at me and goes, come on, dude. Like, he was, like, so annoyed with me that that's what I brought back. He's like, come on, man. You can do better than this. I was like, oh, you're probably right. But what are you
going to do? Just, when you talk about that's your M.O., that they don't speak. My first wife didn't speak any English.
I know. I saw the picture of her. That's crazy. And your second wife, which you did Breaking Bonaduce with, you married on a blind date.
Married her the day I met her. And, if I hadn't been a jerk, it would have lasted longer. But we did 17 years.
Yeah, 17 years. So you knew something. You knew something was right.
Well, when I sobered up in the morning, I just looked and she was asleep there on the bed. And I'm kind of freaking out because I remember what happened. And she woke up and I said, listen, I'm really sorry, but I don't even remember your name. And she goes, oh, it's Mrs. Bonaduce. Try not to forget it. And right there, which is funny, I'll keep her.
You got married, or you don't remember getting married, or she said it as a joke?
It was Mrs. Bonnie. No, we got married.
I didn't remember.
Minister Don, and I owed him $6 until one day in Arizona I tracked him down and gave it to him.
Jesus Christ. But I mean, there was something there. It lasted fucking 17 years, and he got a reality show out of it.
Right. Well, the reality show, out of all the stuff I've done, and I've done some weird stuff, I've done some bad stuff, I've done some hokey. The reality show hurts my feelings. I wish I hadn't have done that. But it was great. I'll admit this. It was fantastic. You should have seen their faces. They come into my house for the very first time, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Am I going to do it? And they knock, and I said, come in. And the second they came in, I rammed a needle into my ass and shot a full-blown steroids. I pulled it out, and I guess I hit something, so it started to bleed. And these guys are going, holy shit, what happened here? What are we going to do? This guy's crazy. And I earned that mantle every day of that show.
That show was chaos. I remember very vividly. Yeah. That was, you seem, and maybe it's because of your new wife, and maybe I don't know how sober or whatnot you are now, and you've been doing radio now for 10 years, that in watching newer interviews of you, and some of it probably comes with age, you're almost exactly 10 years older than me, but you seem in a far more better headspace than you ever were.
Really, 10 years older than you. Am I fatter than you too? Am I old and fat? How many combinations are you going to make?
Yes, that's the
combination. He's only 25. Can't you tell? Look at this young son of a bitch. Look at Ponce de Leon over
dude,
here.
Dude, I already told you I'm 6'5", 260. You want to throw it out?
Oh, yeah. What am I doing?
But you do seem like you're a favorite against Ralph.
You do seem like you're in a much better, happier headspace. We're like, on Breaking Bonaduce, there was sadness in your eyes. There isn't sadness in your eyes anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh yeah, it totally does. I mean, the risk I was taking for that show, this one everybody remembers. I rode a skateboard straight down a hill through a busy signal, and it was red. Cars going like this. And somehow I made it. And the only reason I remember it is because it's on film. And I just sat down on a car on a curb and I drank a bottle of Absolut about yay big in one big chug. And for some reason, people remember that. There's way weirder stuff than that.
Right, for sure. I mean, in looking, as I said to you off air before we started, talk about a guy that fucking lived three lifetimes in a life. It's amazing how many different things you've done. And then, like, I've never been a big reality show fan in general, but I did watch Breaking Bonaducci pretty regularly. But then in looking up your history, I don't even remember this, but I'm sure Shannon remembers this guy because she's a big reality guy. You threw Johnny Fairplace from Survivor. I don't even know who that is, but... And he broke his jaw. I don't even know. The scene, without context, is batshit crazy. Yeah. But I'm sure I don't think there's anything that's going to make sense out of it, but it's still just a crazy moment in life.
All right. Just so you know, Fairplay is a terrible fucking guy. He's a bad guy. He's the guy, if you don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, the first couple of years of Survivor, he does this big moment where his best friend comes to the island and tells him, your grandmother died, and that's why she can't be here. And everybody cries, and it's all bad. And then they find out he's lying. Granny's just fine. So now I already don't like him. Right. And I'm at the Reality Awards or something like that, and I'm getting an award, thank you for asking. And I'm leaving. I got my award. I'm on my way out. And Johnny Fairplay gets on stage, and he says, like, one word. And then he says, why are you booing? And I just walk up onto the stage. I grab the microphone out of his hand. I said, they're booing because they hate you. And I thought it was good. People got a chuckle, and he jumped on me.
Yeah, he jumped on your face forward.
Well, he jumped on me with his legs wrapped around me this way and his face and his head right here. And he's lucky I didn't do that. That's a bad thing. Well, he's not lucky. It came out terrible. I just threw him like this. And, he broke his nose, all his teeth, and his jaw. Right. And sued me for $10 million.
Jesus. Well, let me ask you this. Did you have a relationship with him at all prior to that?
No, I'd never seen him before.
You never met him before in your life? Okay.
Right, why do you ask?
Just curious, because it's just such a weird...
No, never seen him before in my life.
You know, if it's a weird thing for a guy to do, jump up and straddle you if he doesn't know you. It's just fucking... It's a crazy moment in... You know, when I watched it a few times, I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? It's crazy.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest with you. I was going to be all sentimental about it. Fuck him.
Wow.
You know, don't jump on me. What are you, high? Why would you? I wouldn't jump on me.
I mean, I wouldn't. If you're jumping on anyone that you don't know, whatever happens is kind of on you. That's how I look at it.
That's what I said in court, and they believed
me. Oh, my God. Danny, if you were related to me, I would go home more often and visit my family. I mean, if you were my nephew, because let's be honest, I'm 20 years older than you. So
I'm the opposite of that. I know how to make the guests feel good, baby.
Yeah, I'm known for it. Boy, we had Vinny Pastore on a couple weeks ago, and boy, that dude hated me from the moment we started. It was crazy how much he didn't like me. So,
well, in all sincerity, I find you charming, and the fact that you put this much effort into the interview, I think, is great. So I appreciate you all the way around the board, and there's nothing you can do for me. So it's
maybe you could jump on Vinny Pastore and see what happens.
That fight, I live in Bay Ridge. Let's make this shit happen. Street of Brooklyn. I would like to promote it. I'll pay you more than $600 a week or whatever you're getting. Let's
thank you, I appreciate it.
601, Danny.
And then a couple other things I want to hit on that I think this was fucking crazy to me, that obviously Partridge Family huge, you're huge, playing bass as a kid. Sting told you he would have never got into the bass if it wasn't for the Partridge Family, and you weren't even fucking playing bass.
No, and I'm assuming he knew that. He was a bass player when he said it, but Kurt Cobain said if it weren't for the Partridge Family, he would have never gotten into music. Eddie Vedder said something very similar. Yeah, and it was cool because I don't think they're kidding around. Those were some great songs. I never cared for I Think I Love You, our biggest hit, but we did some really good songs, whoever they are, but people appreciated it.
Right, and I mean, I don't like what he's saying, but I think he realized when he was older you weren't playing bass, but as a kid... He probably saw you playing bass and is like, oh, I want to do that too. Because you were probably, I think you're about the same age. I don't know how old he is, but I think he's in his 60s. I'm not sure.
I'm 61, so however old Prince.
So I was imagining that could have probably been what he saw. He saw you playing bass. He's like, oh, I want to do that too. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it is. Hey, can I ask a favor real quick?
Yes.
I'm in the middle of some dental crap and they're doing implants and they're not there yet. This thing is cutting the shit out of me.
Oh, buddy.
Whoa.
I can take it off. Is that cool?
It's fine.
Thank you.
Is that a favor? Did I just do you a favor? Sure, I'll take that as a favor.
I mean, who takes their teeth out on an interview? I appreciated it.
Can I leave that moment in? Or do you want that out? Can I leave that moment in?
What are you talking about?
Can I leave that moment where you take your teeth out in the episode, or do you want that out?
I wouldn't have done it if I wanted that. I don't even understand the words. Do you want me to cut that?
Yeah, by the way, I saw someone. He was doing an interview where someone said, I want to ask, I don't know if I should ask this question. And Danny said, I don't fucking care. Ask me any question. Like, at this point, what he's done on television and that is already public knowledge, it'd be a lot harder to do something that would, I think at this point, you'd be like, no, off limits.
Yeah, I've had a lot of musical guests I've been on the radio about 30 years now. And I've had one or two people that wouldn't perform. And I had a sign up on the wall in my studio, and it said, singer sings, comic made me laugh, or something to that effect. What it really means is, do your fucking job. You're on the radio. Millions of people are listening. So everybody do your job. And some people won't. And some people, this was weird. I'm in pop radio, right? I'm in the top 40 radio. And we book a guest, Wiz Khalifa. And Wiz comes in reeking of drugs, tattoos, and craziness. And I'm not positive why he's there, but I don't care. He's neat. I'm going to interview him. And in one of his songs, he goes, you're short. You got the money. You're Danny Bonaducci, bitch. That was pretty impressive that I made a Wiz Khalifa.
That's fucking cool.
Dang, it's no movie with Elvis, but it's cool.
By the way, I have this constant battle on this show when we book rock stars. I want them to perform. And very often they just don't want to do it, you know? And there was a time, and it never happened. We're going back 25 years. There's a band called Jackal that I'm still friends with.
Sure.
Yeah, I've still been. They said, we never perform acoustic. We just don't do it. And I spent an hour or two on the internet, found their acoustic performance they did somewhere once, and I emailed it to him. I'm like, well, what about this? And he's like, God damn it. You know, so I just, you know, whatever. But I have that struggle. Like, literally, I've turned down dozens of bands because they don't want to play. Like, but that's what people want to see. They want to hear you pluck and play a song.
I'm with you about, especially with comics, because comics are so much easier to throw out of the studio. But why wouldn't you not be funny? And I think, you know, I know some very funny people that I've booked, and you have to go out of your way to not be funny. You're a funny person. You should be funny. And if not, get out. And my station manager got a little sick of it because it happened a couple of times, but I was right.
Yeah, I could not agree more. It's funny. I did, my radio show was on for about 20 years, and I've been doing this podcast now about 7. And it's just, it's weird how people don't get why you're there. It's just like, we had I'm not going to say her name, but she was married to a very famous comic who had passed away. And she came on and she says, I don't want to talk about him. I'm like, but that's why you're here. Like,
that's why you're here.
You know, what are you doing? But anyway, so now just to hit a couple other things that I found interesting. We talked about this off air, talking about moments of like Jesus Christ, your high school buddy, Michael Jackson. Why not? Yeah. Right.
Michael and I were actually a little better friends than high school. We weren't at first, because I know you won't be able to imagine this, but he's a little bit weird. He was, you know, the school had 80 people in it, and it was like from 10 to, you know, so it had like, you know, 9 guys per class, and one of them in 2 different classes was Michael Jackson. And he never spoke. So I went up to him on the way out of school, and I said, hey, Michael, why don't you ever talk? And he said, because I'm in constant remembrance of God. And I said, yeah, but what about chicks? And he found that funny enough that we became kind of pals. And then after that, I've been up to Neverland Ranch with my kids twice. As fun as it looks, I happen to think that cat is a nice guy all the way through and through. But yeah, he was, you know what? That is almost, I did a movie with Elvis, because when he died, somebody bought my high school yearbook for $65,000, autographed from Michael. Oh, $65,000 for high school yearbook.
That's crazy. So you're in the same grade?
Yeah. Same age. Wow. He might be a year older, but same age.
That's pretty wild. Jesus Christ. And speaking of signing.
I met him.
Huh?
You said Jesus Christ. Oh, I met him.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised to be the way your stories go.
He went to graduate school with him.
And speaking of autographs, I love this idea that you've been doing over the past few years. And I think it was your wife's idea that you sign Partridge Family albums when you see them in record stores.
Yeah, this is, it's cool. And yeah, it is my wife's. My wife is a huge fangirl. She just loves all this stuff. And at first I thought, you know, you can't be a big fangirl. You're my wife. Don't be a weirdo. But then I started doing all her crazy fangirl stuff. We went to Liverpool. People knew her. People knew wow. my wife on the streets of Liverpool. So it's really fun. So one of the things we do is we go to these record stores or antique stores, whatever hell they are, or thrift stores, and we find a Partridge Family album, and they're almost always there. And I sign it, and I put it back. And now that we're giving clues as to where it is, it could be 300 miles away, and somebody's going to have it in half an hour. It's amazing.
That's so fucking cool.
People,
that's really
people
cool.
People get a real kick out of it. People really like it.
Yeah, it's such a nice idea. It costs you 30 seconds of time, and it makes someone's life that went and grabbed that. It's like, holy shit.
Well, 30 seconds, but that's not counting the panic. Remember, I got to pick up somebody else's property and deface it. No matter how you look at it, it's artistic graffiti. And then you put it back and get the hell out of the store. But you haven't bought anything yet, and you're running out. Hey, you, Mr. Partridge Face, stay here. It's a lot of weirdness.
Has anyone in your life ever directly referred to you as, hey, you, Mr. Partridge Face?
Right. No, nobody ever called me Mr. Partridge Face.
Okay. That would have been pretty fucking cool.
And then you check, let's see how good your research is here. Uh-huh. You know, the Partridge Family was in Mad Magazine.
I do know that because I watched your 50th anniversary special where you all were on. It was really hard to watch with the audio quality for some of them, where people dropping out over and over again. But you brought it up at one point there. Someone said that you guys were on in Mad Magazine.
Yeah, and we were called the Putrid Family, which, you know, you've made it when you're in Mad Magazine, and I was Hammy Putrid. And I got a little chubby as a kid, and that hurt my feelings, but apparently everybody my age anyway was reading Mad Magazine and thought that was super cool.
That's awesome. I mean, that was like a writer to be, I think you'd be a bigger celebrity if you're in Mad Magazine than you were on TV at my age when I was a kid.
Yeah, oh, I think that may be true.
It's also weird when you're coming to age on television, you're going through all that awkward shit on television. I can't even, like, I hate when now at 51, if I get a bad picture of myself where I look fat or whatever, and I'm like, oh God, I'm gonna hear this from fucking fans. You had millions of people watching every awkward moment of your life. That had to fuck you up. I just fucking, no wonder you got addicted to cocaine. What can I tell you?
Well, no wonder everybody was doing it. But yeah, that was the nastiest part, really. That, and I'll tell you this, I got a job at Black Angus and Steakhouse, Black Angus Family Steakhouse.
I used to work at one.
I got a job there, and you have to do all the stations. You have to do everybody's job for a week. So it started off, I was a busboy. And when I would get up to a table, there'd be one of two reactions. Holy shit, that's Danny Bonaducci Partridge Face. And the other one was, ooh, I'm sorry. Are you doing okay? Yeah. And I hated it, man. They didn't need to be that nasty, but they were, and I needed to eat, although I only kept that job for like 6 weeks. I devised the way out. We had to change the light bulbs way up high. And I knew if I just fell off the ladder, which is what I was going to do, and then go to the hospital and then get some checks. And I said, you know, I'm kind of a rugged guy. Nobody's going to believe me if I just fall from like 6 feet. They're not going to believe it. So I snuck a razor blade to the end of my finger, climbed up the ladder, went like this. My eye starts bleeding like that. I throw myself off the ladder, and sure enough, I was right. They come and kind of kick me and say, get up, man, we're opening. And then they turned me over and saw the blood, and they said, oh, my God, and that's when they called the ambulance.
Oh, my God. So now we just learned that Danny Bonaducci did insurance fraud. Very nice.
He's pretty much a pro wrestler.
Well, that's what Hulk Hogan saw, because when I did that, I got quite the reaction. So I did that the Hulk Hogan wrestling thing, and he said, I had black glasses on, and as I'm talking to him, blood starts to come out from under the glasses. And so we do the thing. Everybody tells me how great I am because I'm still on roids. I look like a wrestler every step of the way. And then Hulk says to me as the blood's coming down, he says, you know that cut on your face? And I said, yeah. He said, did you do that yourself? And I went, yeah. And he said, with what? And I said, I found a nail in the dressing room. And he went, you missed your calling.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
You got juice.
And then the thing that I thought, you know, a lot of your stories, when you hear like, oh, just like this one was just bad timing when everybody in the world was getting talk shows during the day. Like, I think it was like the mid 90s, roughly. I don't know exactly when that was. And you get Danny.
94-ish.
Yeah, and Danny! Was the name of your show.
Yep.
And
just one, that's the one.
Right. And just as it starts to pick up steam is when that fucking crazy Jenny Jones thing happens.
Guy shoots one of her guests, right in the chest with a shotgun in a trailer. Imagine. But then everybody shut down. I remember my very first guest after that made noise. A girl came on, and this was early. I didn't even think about this. She said she had 65 piercings all over her body. And I said, well, that's a lot. And she said, well, there are some people that have 100, even 250. And I said, well, they must be crazy. They cut, shut down. Mary Kellogg comes out and said, you can't, you're beating her up. I said, no, I'm not. But they went, so I was doomed, but it was fun. It was, it got to show, here's what I can do.
Wow, someone got an email. So you did, I think that probably was how you were able to then parlay into radio, which you've been doing now for 10 years in Seattle, but for like 30 years, you've been doing radio.
I was actually doing radio first. And this is actually a real compliment that I didn't think of that much. Disney sent a couple of people down to just sit in the studio and watch me work and talk to me. They said, I tried to get them to talk and stuff, and they said, Disney won't let us talk. And I said, okay. And then afterwards, they gave me a talk show. So I thought, and it was expensive. Shit. It didn't make it, but it was expensive to put a lot of that stuff on. And I remember, and you'll relate to this, but you'll understand after meeting me why this might have happened. So the show's getting canceled for sure. We're going to get the message really soon. And we've got some animal trainer guy, and he's got a bunch of weird things, including a rattlesnake. And I think to myself, if I can get that snake to bite me, they'll pick me up for a second season. And I was dead fucking serious, but I couldn't make it happen and not make it look like I did it on purpose. You're
like slapping the rattlesnake, making loud noises, fucking crazy. You're just more of an, I'm such not an adrenaline junkie. You are obviously an adrenaline junkie your whole life. You're searching for, I'm such a puss. I'm the exact opposite of that.
That's funny because often I'm searching for puss.
Hey, well, then that's where we're in line. That, now you're speaking my language. All right, before we go any further, we don't talk about this a lot, but if you go to podcastmerch.com/SDR, you get all the cute little T-shirts, mugs, and stuff for the SDR show. Wear the colors proudly. Get an SDR shirt. Go to podcastmerch.com/SDR. And one of the complaints I got, which we fixed, was that all of our shirts and hoodies have like sex, drugs, and rock and roll on it and can't really wear that around the kids. I get it. So we have a non-offensive option. The one that just says the SDR show could mean anything. You don't know. There's no wieners in it. There's no nothing in it. It's just a way to support. Go to podcastmerch.com/SDR and support the show with a T-shirt or a hoodie or a mug right now. All right, let's get back into it. By the way, James, you're going to love this. Speaking of other, once-in-a-lifetime moments, dude also did a fucking movie with Mark Hamill. How about that?
Very first movie.
You're unbeatable. Let me just say that about you. This is everything you've done. If I did 1/1000th of what you've done, I would go into the grave happy. I feel like
I'm looking at if you did 1/1000th of what I've done, you'd be dead.
Fuck it. I mean, the happy right? It never serves, but I'm trying to tell you.
I get it, man. Thank you.
It's pretty wild. And was that a relationship that carried over throughout the years with you and Mark?
I've talked to him several times. It's funny. He follows me on Twitter, which I don't fully understand, but he's very kind. And I went to his house in Malibu before the movie. It was like right after Star Wars. And it was like the size of a 2-car garage, but it was probably $1 million. And I walk in and he's got, and then you're going to freak out over this. He had every action figure from Star Wars that they make. And he had it lining his house on a shelf. And I was pretty impressed with that.
That's so fucking cool. God damn it.
Pretty movie, wild. I think, was called Corvette Summer, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm not making fun of the guy in any way, but I'll just say this. It was the first thing he did after a very serious car crash that caused him trauma to his face. Yeah, exactly. So they rebuilt his face. And for the most part, it looks real normal. But when Luke Skywalker walks in and he's not perfect somehow, it's really weird.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very well-known, because he looks very different, I think, from 1 to 2 is where he looks like a different person.
Real quick, Ralph, I'm sorry to interrupt. James has to run.
I'm sorry, guys, and I'm sorry to think there was a mix-up here at the studio, so we started late.
All right, James, no worries. We now, Danny officially hates you. That's cool.
Well, let me see if I've got this right. You can't stay and Jay ain't here.
Yeah, but he would have wore this fucking cool ass Muhammad Ali Bruce Lee shirt for you, goddammit.
That's you, man. All right, that's you. I get right. it. That's it's you.
Funny. I enjoyed the shit out of you, and Jay would have said some wild shit. I'm just like, yo, you're the greatest human being of all fucking time.
We okay, love you, Jay.
I accept. I like this show.
James, you, if you're going to go out on a note, you go out on that note, calling him the best human being of all time. How could you? How
of all
could
time.
I know how to butter my bread, baby. I know how to butter this. Yeah, I'm sorry. I got to run down the street to go host this show, and I got this crazy thing tomorrow. I'm so sorry. Love you guys. Appreciate it. Danny, right, be good, one. If I'm okay. ever in Seattle, I want you to throw a fish at me. I want to go to the market.
Fair enough. Just so you know, I'm completely cool with you running off to make a living to do whatever you do. I appreciate the time you already gave me.
Man.
Having said
you're
that, James.
You're this much higher than Ric Flair now. I mean,
having said that, James. Having said that, log the fuck off already, James, for God's sake.
Yeah, you've been saying goodbye for like an hour and a half.
Right, and kill your camera. Jesus, you fucking idiot. Come on now.
Yo, I think Joey may still be there. Maybe he has to log out for him. I don't know.
How do we do that?
I can kick him.
All right, kick him out for God's sakes. All right, so anyway, let's get back to this. Now you're doing radio for 10 years. You're in Seattle. I will listen to a couple of your podcasts. It seems like, although it's funny because it's the Danny Bonaducci and Sarah show. It's not even, she doesn't even get a last name. It's just Danny Bonaducci.
And Sarah. She won't give it.
Oh, she won't give it.
She absolutely will not give her last name. I don't have any idea what it is. Swear to God, I don't like my kids that much, but I swear to God.
Fair enough. I just like when I suddenly it's like Danny Bonaducci and Sarah.
Nope. The only thing I had to do with that was it was Danny and Sarah. And I said, make it Danny Bonaducci. That's a valuable name.
Yeah, it's a very recognizable name.
And then she just flat out said, and it was kind of weird because the scuttlebutt was she didn't want her fans to find out where she lived. That's a real thing.
Shannon can attest to the fact that male fans are creeps. How many dick pics a day you get, Shannon?
Plenty. I try to avoid using my last name, but it gets brought up on shows all the time.
Right. Wait, so you want dick pics? Is that what I'm getting?
No, yes, I'm
Dan,
all
set. I say that right now. If you ever saw one that was cuter than mine, I'd put money against it.
I've seen a lot of dick pics.
As a morning show guy, we do a lot of crazy things on this show that I think very rarely can be outdone without FCC, because you have FCC regulation. You can't do a lot of things. We've done some crazy things. This isn't that crazy, but we did do a dick pic dating game for Shannon where we picked the dicks, me and Jay, and we did a dating game. All she ever saw was their penises. Right. She never saw the guys until after the show.
And did you go on a date?
Yeah, well, we ended up we did that show because I hadn't had sex in 2 years at that time.
Why?
And, well, right now it's 3 years again. So it's a whole thing. But after that, the guy that came in second place lived in a different state. We talked for like a month and then he came back to New York and then we did have sex. So it worked.
Oh,
yeah. So dick pic dating. Nice. Let guys know that send dick pics. It works. Keep sending those dick pics. And then lastly, before we ask the first, I went on your IGTV and watched this crazy Orange and Delicious thing that you've been doing. First of all, you're wearing an official chef's coat. Are you actually into cooking, or you just thought it would look cool in a chef's coat?
I thought it looked cool in a chef's coat, but it had my name in it because I judged a cooking show, like a live show, and the chef there gave me this cool jacket. So I wear it whenever I do something like that, and I really dig it. But as far as cooking gets involved, I watch Top Chef.
Okay, and the story is ridiculous. Everything involves Kraft powdered cheese because you accidentally ordered a lot of it. Is that?
Yeah, I ordered in the package when you buy it, there's maybe 6-8 ounces. Mm. I bought 1.5 pounds and accidentally, man, I swear to God, I'm just,
you
as you know,
buy 1.5 pounds of cheese.
Oh, as you know from your experience, I suck with computers. So whatever it is, it came to my house and my lovely wife who came up with the signing of the Partridge Family came up with Orange and Delicious. And we did a couple of them, and it was really fun, but I'm busy. Orange and Delicious. What are you talking about?
That's really funny. Would you ever refer to your penis that way?
Orange and Delicious?
No, oh, you're a redheaded.
I swear to God, I will from now on. And I was like, hey, honey, I want you to refer to my penis as Orange and Delicious. Yup. Thank you, she says.
I heard her said you got it. That's great. All right, so... we always end the show this way, Danny. It's going to be a fascinating one for you because I know the answer to one.
The first time ever I saw drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We always ask our guests their first experience with all three. We mean by that the first concert you went to, the first drug you ever did, and the first time you had sex. We start with concert, but we mean one you went on your own volition. I mean, you've been in this industry for such a long time on your own. I have no idea what this answer is, but the first concert you went to saying, I want to go see that show.
That was Lynyrd Skynyrd playing at some arena in Woodland Hills, California, seated about 3,000 people. And the cool part of it is, although the man passed, I really liked him. I have a very cool picture of me and Ronnie Van Zant that it looks kind of cool. It's not the trading cards, but it's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. How old were you at that time?
14, 15.
Okay, that's good. So it's fair to say that you were performing as the Partridge Family before you ever actually went to a concert.
Oh, no. I forgot about, how do you forget about this? I saw Led Zeppelin when I was 12 or 13. I remember that because my mom's freaking out. You're not going to go see that band by yourself. You're 12 or 13. And I said, well, Russell Burmaster will take me. And it was great. And it was such rock and roll because they're on stage and they're doing just an incredible, incredible job. And I'm watching them. And there's a guy in front of me with a fro. And it's big, but I can look around him and stuff like that. Somebody shoots a bottle rocket. I can't imagine they meant to do this because you couldn't even see where it coming. It goes in this dude's hair and boom, and his hair. I mean, there was so much hairspray holding that together. He was bald within seconds, man. It was amazing.
And now you had a great shot of the stage. You could see very easily.
I could see much better because he went away in an ambulance. Apparently, it wasn't as adorable as I thought.
That's crazy. And so now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
You have a lot of rules for this segment.
That's how we do it.
I'm going to go with my first, acid.
Acid. So how old were you?
Well, I took it, I'm going to go with six times. I was I was still living in my family's neighborhood. So I was about 13 and I didn't know what it would do. And then I tried to go places and people would turn and you could see on their faces, those guys know I'm on acid. And of course they were right. And the big time for me is I saw Star Wars on acid opening night 1977.
Oh, that's fucking cool.
Dude, when they went to hyperspace, holy shit.
Oh, my God, that's so fucking cool. And now I know this story a little bit because I just, in doing research, your first time having sex.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a great story.
So there's a girl. There's a girl, and you can see, I don't know how she got there because she's wandering around, not the studio as in inside the studio, but just the parking lot where we all park, and our names are on our parking spaces. So she goes up to Cassidy's and she stays there, and Cassidy does not show up, and she's beside herself. Or Cassidy shows up and says, you know, I'm not about this, whatever the thing was. She turns around and here's how I like to look at it. Any partridge in a storm. That's what I'm thinking. And the woman, I'm like, you know, they press charges these days, but the woman took me into my dressing room that had my name on it so you couldn't get lost. And I like to just put it this way. She made me a man. I don't know what I did for her because it was just weird to be that on that kind of stuff happening, but that's the first sex.
It'd be cool when you were done. She looked at you and she went, you disgust me.
Then she called me Mr. Penis Face. So.
That's great. So you lost your virginity to a David Cassidy groupie who got disappointed that David wasn't there. Is that a fair way to put it?
And then got re-disappointed with me.
Fair enough. All right, so to wrap this up, first of all, dude, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a fucking blast. I could talk to you all day long. A couple of quick things. Obviously, you're on Twitter at the Dooch Man. You're doing mornings on KZOK 102.5 FM for 10 years in Seattle. Is there anything else you want to push or plug right now?
No, not a thing, man. I'll come back though. It looks like I sold another kind of tawdry television show.
And when we get on
the air, I'd love to come back if you would like.
I would absolutely love it. If you're ever in New York, we'd love to bring you to the studios too. Now that the world is slowly opening up.
Right. Well, I'm in New York sometimes. I'll take you up on that.
That'd be great, dude. I'll add you today on Instagram. Shannon, your plugs.
You can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
And send those dick pics because you know it works for Shannon. All right, just follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My health and wellness show that I do with the founder of Juice Press is called Good Sugar. It comes out every Monday.
That's
and
great.
Honestly, Danny, thank you, man. It was a fucking pleasure to have you on.
Hey, thank you very much. It was a treat to be here. And like I said, that's a lot of work you did to, you know, interview a has-been. And I just, you did it. And I really do appreciate the effort.
Oh, man. Thank you, man. It's an honor to have you on, dude. I do. That was all. Let's do a song of the week. You want to do, we got to do a song of the week, Shannon. I'm sorry. Danny, we'll let you pick a song. It could be anything. Could be a Partridge Family song. Could be I'm a Magician. It could be Led Zeppelin. Whatever you want. Pull a song. We'll add it to the SDR Show playlist.
Okay. And in my opinion, and you're going to weird and you're going to say too soon, the best rock and roll song ever written, Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses.
All right. I love it. That's very great. We just had Tracy Guns on, who was LA Guns, and he is the founder of Guns N' Roses. That's why it's called Guns N' Roses. And he was just on the show a couple weeks ago. So that works out perfectly.
Cool. Well, like I said, this has been a treat.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Well, thanks for making it to the end of the show. And as I've been talking about every week, we want to highlight some of the other shows that is on Gas Digital. This one, these dudes came and did SDR, I'd say about a month and a half ago. Just really fun guys. Great, great podcast and great dudes. It's Derek Gaines and Dave Temple from the No Need for Apologies podcast. Here's a clip of it. And if you like what you hear, you can hear and see every episode they've ever done on Gas Digital or subscribe anywhere you consume podcasts. Here it is right now, a clip from No Need for Apologies.
Going on, young Dylan McGree, they were talking about fast food breakfast and how it was good. I got to thinking, Is it me or is hood pussy just as good as fast food breakfast?
Hood pussy, better than fast food breakfast.
Like, well, go ahead, you got to elaborate a little bit.
Like, you remember them donuts they used to serve in grade school that came in the hot plastic bag and the bag was steaming and you...
Oh, yeah.
That's what I think hood pussy is. But you can't have it all the time because it's not good. It's not good
it's
dietary.
It's not good for you. Huh? We start a restaurant called hood pussy.
How should it come in? Do-do-do-do.
Hood pussy! Do-do-do-do.
Hood pussy! The restaurant, and it's a plate of food steaming like sizzlers. It's got it like gonna be a little S steaming
all day long right now, man. Because I could just go in on hood bitches right now,
okay?
You know what I mean? Just the teal green sweatpants, no pockets.
Do-do-do-do-do. I love them.
<Do-do-do-do-do>. You know that little jean jacket that we don't really know where it came from?
Yeah.
<Do-do-do-do-do>. They'll treat you right until they decide they don't want you here no more.
Do, 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 do.
Hood pussy! Could you imagine a restaurant where they just kick you out? I'm tired of y'all.
But bet it's only 5 p.m.
So the fuck what? I ain't for this shit today.
Do, 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 do.
Hood pussy!
Ranked 98th in customer service. Ranked 98th in customer service because she didn't feel like it because it was too hot outside for that shit.